Call tonight's meeting of the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission to order. Before we dive into the agenda, I just want to welcome Kathy Menz, our new Planning Commission member, and later on during commission comments, we'd love to learn more about you. But we'll save that to the end. If you didn't get a chance to meet Kathy, please do so before the night's up. Okay, can we get a roll? Amelia, can we get a roll call, please?
Yeah. Steele?
Here.
Cable?
Here.
McBride?
Here.
Menz?
Here.
Merkin?
Here.
Smith?
Here.
Sherwood?
Here.
Are there any changes or additions to tonight's agenda? Hearing none, the agenda will stand approved. Are there any changes or additions to the minutes for this evening? Minutes from the 6th of December. Hearing none, the minutes will stand approved. We do have a time here at the beginning of the meeting for public comment. This is for the public to raise any issues or ask questions or present any comments on issues that are not related to what's on the agenda scheduled for tonight. Is there anyone who'd like to address the commission in any way? Very good. On to public hearings then. 6-1, consideration of rezoning 01-17 and subdivision 03-17, Cameron Estates third edition. Jerry?
Thank you. As you said, Aaron, it's a rezoning request and a subdivision plat submittal. Case number 03-17 for the rezoning request and 01-17 for the subdivision plat. This item was deferred from the February 1st, 2017 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. The property owner is Kirk Culp, LLC, Kirk Friedrich. The property is located just south of 190th Street, just to the north. Proposed access is off of Cobblestone Court, which is a part of the second edition, Cameron Estates. It's also west of Hickory Hills subdivision. And it's about a little over a mile northwest of the city of Indianapolis. Current zoning is A1 Agricultural District. The requested district is AR, Agricultural Residential District. This is consistent with the first two phases of Cameron Estates. Given the plat is a minor subdivision plat. The property consists of 9.75 acres. It's located in Section 19 of Franklin Township. The proposed subdivision includes two development lots for a single-family dwelling on each proposed lot. There's also an outlot I, which is located in the southeast portion of the 9.75 acres, which was where they constructed the detention basin. There's an outlot H to the north and west of that, which is planned to be for open space and preservation of the natural area there. It's also in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. The primary designation is Rural Service and Conservation. Subcategory is Rural Residential and Natural Areas. The proposed development lots would contain about 1.2 acres each. So this is the aerial. Subject property is outlined in red for you. Again, we're in Franklin Township. So the property is in this area. We're about over a mile northwest of the city of Ames. Current zoning and land use of this area, again, this area is somewhat in a transitional area of the county. There are existing single-family dwellings, single-family lots, in Cameron Estates to the south and to the west, as well as Hickory Hills to the east. There's also individual larger parcels with dwellings. There's also larger agricultural parcels in this area, as well as some drainage natural area and tree locations to the north and to the east. Adjacent zoning is A1 Agricultural District to the north and east. There's a 35-acre parcel with a dwelling that was constructed in 1949 to the north. And directly to the east, there's a 4.75 acre parcel with a dwelling that was constructed in 1968. As I said, Hickory Hills subdivision is located directly to the east. It's zoned R1 Transitional Residential District. The minimum lot size in an R1 Transitional Residential District is 25,000 square foot in size. lots in that subdivision that would be adjacent to this property range anywhere from 3/4 acre to 1.5 acres. As I mentioned, Cameron Estates, first and second edition, are zoned AR, agricultural residential district. Lot sizes are 1 acre and greater. Again, this just shows you the area. Covers what I just went over. Subject property outlined in red. 9.75 acres, parcel to the east, 4.75. There's a 35 acre parcel to the north. The lots to the east, which would abut up to the subject property, range in size from 3/4 acre to 1.5 acres. And then again, the existing lots in Cameron Estates, first and second edition, are 1 acre and greater in size. This is the subdivision. To the west and south, Cameron Estates, AR Agricultural District. To the east, where you see the yellow, that represents R1, single-family lots. And then everything else, where you see the aerial, that's A1 Agricultural District. As I mentioned, it's in the Ames Urban Fringe. Hickory Hills to the east is also in the Ames Urban Fringe. Under 521, it says areas that are designated this, the cities, which would include Ames and the city of Gilbert, are to waive their right to review the subdivision and impose the design and improvement standards. So the review will be solely with the county for the rezoning and the plat. A little bit of background information. Again, this item was before the Planning and Zoning Commission in February of 2017. The plat that was submitted at that time included 4 development lots, one each for a single-family dwelling. 2 lots were proposed off of the cobblestone court, which is the cul-de-sac road on the north end. And then on the south end, there were 2 additional proposed lots off of Harvest Road, which is the main north-south road that extends through the subdivision. Prior to the meeting, however, the staff received concerns from adjacent landowners within Cameron Estates, within Hickory Hills, and elsewhere with regard to concerns with the proposed development that was being presented, as well as concerns about existing stormwater drainage from Cameron Estates development. So based on that, the applicant requested a deferral of this item and spent a considerable amount of time with the existing landowners in Cameron Estates, in Hickory Hills, and elsewhere to learn more about what their concerns are. During that time period, the Homeowners Association in Hickory Hills hired an engineer who did some studying of the topography in Cameron Estates and looked at the drainage patterns, and based on calculated storm events, came up with some recommendations that were made available to the applicant and the applicant's engineer. They also formed a drainage and environmental review committee and provided information to the applicant and the applicant's engineer in April of last year. The applicant's engineer did respond to the items that the engineer raised and for the most part addressed the recommendations, and part of that included the construction of the stormwater detention basin, which we'll show you on the plat, and we've got a site photo to show you, as well as some adjustments to some of the existing drainage infrastructure. So with the rezoning, we're going to go through the rezoning request first. There's 5 things that the Planning and Zoning Commission is to consider. The first thing is how it complies with the development plan. In this case, it's not the cornerstone, the capstone comprehensive plan that we're looking at. It's the Ames Urban Fringe plan. The plan indicates that these areas are developed at rural densities and in areas where urban infrastructure may not be in place. There is no sanitary sewer. There is rural water in this area and gas and electric. The rural residential designation recognizes that there's a market segment for large lots in a rural setting, benefiting from agricultural activities on a smaller scale. However, they do have restrictive covenants prohibiting livestock within the development. The policies include a maximum average net density of 1 unit per acre. Full urban infrastructure standards are not required. There's a goal in protecting environmental resources, managing stormwater runoff and erosion control in accordance to county and state requirements. As I mentioned, the applicant is proposing two development lots on the north end within the clearing area, and we'll show you some information on that. Two, the proposed rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent of the district. Again, it's AR, Agricultural Residential District. Community facilities and open space uses that serve the residents may be included in the layout. There's nothing like that planned for this development. The district is not intended to permit isolated rural dwellings incompatible with surrounding land uses. Again, they're proposing lot sizes that are consistent with those in the existing two Cameron State subdivision, as well as Hickory Hills to the east. The proposed two-lot subdivision will not likely have agricultural-type uses. As I said, they have covenants restricting livestock. There's about 7 acres of open space in outlots within the third addition, which is before you. Three, the proposed rezone shall be compatible with surrounding land uses. We've kind of gone through that. This was part of the applicant's goal to acquire this portion and include it in the existing phases of Cameron Estates. Both lots will have access off of Cobblestone Court, again, which is the cul-de-sac road. They will not be taking access off of the county road, which is 190th Street, or the main north-south road, Carter's Road. Much of the creek and tree area will be undeveloped. They show proposed septic systems. It's likely that the tree of the houses will be in the clearing area on that north end. The outlets will help to serve to filter and absorb stormwater and also serve as a buffer between this development, the existing phases of Cameron Estates, and the adjacent land uses. This one talks about natural resources. If there's more than 50% natural resources, they have to ask for a designation that's more restrictive or ask for a conservation overlay, or come up with some conditions to protect those natural resources. Again, they're proposing 4.3 acres of open space of the 9.75, so less than the 50%. But again, the impact will likely be very minimal. We'll get to what our ordinance requires for natural resource protection. When you look at this development and the existing two phases, there's about 12 acres of natural resource area of the 74 plus acres, which comes to about 60% natural resources. Our ordinance requires that for subdivisions that include 10 or more lots, that they're supposed to have a 15% open space requirement for the benefit of the property owners and they're exceeding that requirement. And then also, the last thing is in an A1 district, if it has a high land evaluation site assessment score, which is a goal of preserving prime farm ground, then it should not be rezoned. The LISA scores are lower than what the maximum number is there, so that's not an issue. We'll get into the site photos. We've got kind of a mixture of photos from February of 2017 and the current ones that we took in December. This first one is the north end. There's an existing house and garage that has been removed. That's what the area looks like now. This is the area east of Cobblestone Court. You can kind of see there's a tree area that kind of surrounds like an open clearing area. And based on research from our conservation department, they told us that this area was actually in production. So it was in crop production prior to this state. So this shows you December 2017, that same clearing area. This is where the two proposed lots will be. February 2017, this is looking north and west. This is the cul-de-sac. This is a new house. Again, that new house is part of the second addition. This is off of Harvest Road, again, on the south portion of the subdivision. We're looking to the northwest. This is the more current photo. Again, you can see some wear there. There's the construction of that stormwater detention basin. That's what it looked like in February. Again, a lot of part of what you're seeing there is the activity from the stormwater detention basin. After the basin that was constructed, it's about 16, 17 feet in depth, and it's part of Outlot I. And that's the outflow area that where the creek is. It extends through Hickory Hills, located to the east. A little bit of history on the plat itself. The preliminary plat was approved by the Board of Supervisors February 11, 2014. The final plat of the first edition was this. First edition was July 1 of 2014, and then the second edition was approved by the board January 3 of 2017. This shows you the preliminary plat. We've got the first phase on the south end, and the second phase on the north end with this natural area. And then you can see how it fits in with what they're bringing tonight with the third edition. And they showed you the 9.75 acres. There again is the area that you're looking at. Gives us the 9.75 acres. Somewhere in the detention basin, it's down in the southeast portion. This will be Outlot H, which will be preserved in a natural state. Green areas represent outlots. That's where the creek and areas are. A closer view and shows you the two lots on the north end. They're over a little over an acre in size. Access off of the cul-de-sac, well, proposed joint access. The purple line represents the overlay, which there is some discrepancy from the end of a fringe with what the natural areas are, but you can clearly see that there's areas on the east, on the right side, that are not natural areas, they're not tree growth. So it yields itself to site review for more clarity on what's actually going on. This is the actual line drawing, showing you the same thing. A little bit of comparison from what was submitted before to this one. The difference is the number of development lots from 4 to 2. There's more outlot area. They added a strip on the east side of the two proposed development lots. And then north of the center of the creek, there's additional space. The area that was going to be development lots on the south end, which were going to be flag lots, is outlot area, as well as the area in the southeast portion of the plat. They did construct a stormwater detention basin, which is in Outlot I. Again, Outlot H will be preserved. Stormwater drainage tiling was installed on the north end of the subdivision on the north side of Cobblestone Court. Natural resources, the ordinance, Story County's land development regulations, do require protection of natural vegetation. However, they are permitted to remove up to 15% of natural resources for grading, road construction, building site clearance, and that type of thing. Under common open space, again, kind of went through that. If you look at the entire subdivision, there's a 15% open space requirement. They're exceeding that with about over 16% open space. As I mentioned, very little vegetation will be impacted with what they're proposing to do. The septic systems and the houses are anticipated to be constructed within that clearing area. We have received a statement from the applicant's engineer that they're meeting or exceeding the stormwater management manual and meeting the SUDAS requirements. A little bit of information about utilities and related services. Midland Power is electric, Light Energy Gas, CenturyLink Phone, Xenia Rural Water. Mary Greeley provides ambulance service. Gilbert Fire provides fire service. Conceptual review was held back in December of 2016. During that time, we had a sit down before the actual submittal in February. That was in January. The actual resubmittal took place in November of 2017, and then we had a couple of review periods, December 15 and the 22nd of 2017. We did notify property owners within a quarter mile of the property on December 21st. We also prepared a publication in the three newspapers designated by the board. We did, at the time of the preparation of the staff report, did not receive any comments, but this afternoon I received question from an adjacent landowner to the east about an easement. I did provide a written response. Basically states that the property owners to the east, they had a question about whether there's an easement for a road located between their property and 9.75 acres. And my response is that they're not proposing any roads with this subdivision plat that they're taking access from the received a second edition. So I believe that I answered the property owner's response. I provided this information to the property owner and the property owner's engineer. We also provided the information about the plat to the cities of Gilbert and Ames, received no comments. Provided information to the fire department. They supported the request. Also provided information to Mary Greeley Ambulance. They provided some information about some self-help programs that they're getting involved in that they want staff to know about, which we provided to the applicant and to the applicant's engineer. I think this has something to do with a trend, both regard to emergency response and fire suppression. So points to consider with the rezoning request, the AR Agricultural District is consistent with the zoning of the first two phases, as I mentioned. It would create a uniform boundary by squaring off that northeast corner. Proposed lots do compare in size to Cameron Estates and Hickory Hills to the east. That reduction in the number of lots, an increase in the amount of open space. Applicant could potentially request a change to R1, which is what Hickory Hills is. However, the applicant wanted to stay true to the concept that was started with the rural setting to limit impact to the natural resources. So that's why the AR, Agricultural Residential District designation is requested. With regard to the plat, this was part of the applicant's plan to acquire this property to complete this project, so that's why this is being requested. Third edition is a logical extension of what's already been started. There'll be no impact off of 190th to the north or the main north-south road, Harvest Road. Access will be off Cobblestone Court, as I mentioned. Increase in the open space. Again, the activity, construction activity will occur in the clearing area. Much of this I've repeated multiple times. And so with the rezoning request, staff is recommending approval, which brings you to alternative number one. Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommends approval of the zoning amendment to the Story County Board of Supervisors as submitted and requested by the applicant as put forth in REZ 03-17. And then with the actual subdivision plat, we are recommending approval. We had actually a third round of questions that mostly have been addressed. I think there's still a point with regard to the access. The applicant is here, the applicant's engineer is here to go through that. I think it kind of boils down to an interpretation. This is something that they could potentially ask for alternative compliance. However, we did not receive an official submittal for that. But and again, I'd be happy to answer your question about that. So that brings us to item two. Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommends approval of a minor subdivision plat with the above stated condition to the Story County Board of Supervisors, which is SUB 01-17. We move that and be happy to answer your questions.
Is Harvest Road 505th? Harvest Road you're referring to, that's not that.
No, that's the road to the west. It's Cameron State's first and second edition.
To the west. Okay.
That's this road.
Okay, so it's the one that curves over to become 190th.
Right.
And 190th, that the county's still planning on vacating that bridge?
They closed the west and did a renovation project for the east.
Yeah.
So it's closed.
So you can go north, but you can't go west on 190th anymore.
Closed.
Closed.
Why did you ask that question?
I was just trying to get my bearings on that road. I don't think, since there aren't any roads that go north from there, you know, onto 190th, I don't really think it's an issue. But I was just trying to make sure I was looking at it correctly. Oh, through the subway. Okay. Okay, I got it. Thank you. I do wonder about the outlot that's going to be maintained as natural area. Is that staying with the developer then? Or who maintains that?
It's part of the Homeowners Association.
Okay. So they'll maintain it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And is that the association that enforces the covenants that are in this? Who enforces those?
There are restrictive covenants.
Yeah. And that's my question is, who enforces these as the homeowners? Is that right?
There will be a homeowners association board. Courtesy of you to speak
about. Okay. No, good. Somebody ought to be looking at this stuff.
Right. There was also a driveway for the previous property that came in off of 190th, right? And that's being abandoned.
Right. There's no plans whatsoever to do another lot. Under the first submittal there was, that changed.
Is there only one way in and out of the subdivision?
There's actually access.
There's three.
Yeah. There's access off of Camera School Road to the south and
105th. 105th. Yeah. West.
So 505th currently is gravel, and then Cameron School is paved.
Mm-hmm. And we have two things. One is the rezoning request, and then the second would require two separate votes.
Right. What did Ames review this as part of the Ames Urban Fringe plan?
We sent copies to them with the agreement because of the location, the rural residential, they are to wait for their to review it.
And Gilbert as well?
They also received a copy, but we did not receive responses from them.
Okay.
Any other questions for the staff? Okay. Would the applicant like to address the commission?
Sure, I can.
We'll lift you up to the podium, please.
Okay.
Give us your name and business address for the record, please.
Kurt Friedrich with the Friedrich Companies, 106th Street in Ames. And we're pleased to present to you Cameron 3. Jerry and his team did a nice job of putting together the report. We've spent, as you mentioned, considerable time and care over the last year and a half since we acquired the property to get to where we are right now. Originally, we had proposed four lots, and actually five, and down to two lots. The fifth lot was the lot that was accessed off of 190th on the north, where the original homestead was, which we have removed and seeded and so forth, and have no plans to rebuild on that original home site. We think that this addition really integrates nicely into Cameron, and we had laid out Cameron 1 and 2 in such a manner to anticipate that if we were able to purchase the Berg property from Lois, that we would be able to integrate the addition nicely into the subdivision. We have reserved at the south end of the picture there, outlot D, for a potential access to that southern half of the 10 acres. That obviously now is being utilized as outlot H, and then also outlot I, we subsequently have created for the detention basin, which we have built as just added protection for stormwater runoff. And then we've limited the platting to two lots there at the north end off of Cobblestone, creating two similarly sized lots to what currently exists there in the rest of Cameron Estates. As Jerry mentioned, I think my engineer and Jerry might have a slight different interpretation of the size or configuration of what the access easement should look like. But I'm not sure if this is the time to get into the specifics of that. But I think
you're going to bring this up and then not go into it?
Oh, well, I think Jerry mentioned it.
You know, so I don't want to slow things down, but you bring something up and then you're not sure. No, I'm sorry.
Well,
excuse me.
And if I'm happy to speak to it. Right now, the configuration of that easement is approximately 20 feet wide, and we're taking it. We think it should go approximately 100 feet east to west to provide for a practical length of the easement. Practically, that's what it will be whenever a home or homes would be built back onto those two lots. And planning is wanting to limit the length of that easement to 50 feet. And we disagree with the length of that easement. We think that it should be allowable to make it approximately 100 feet. Is that about what it is, Scott? So that's the difference in interpretations.
Any questions for the applicant?
I had a question about, and I really like the things that you've done, the drainage, you know, retention and all that. Did you or did the engineer study look specifically at runoff in Squaw Creek and whether this reduces runoff from that area?
Scott, would you like to speak to that? Thank you.
Scott Renault, Fox Engineering, 414 South 17th Street. So I'm going to be very specific to the word that you use runoff, not runoff rate or runoff. So I assume by runoff you mean an amount. And on that, the amount of runoff from this is about the same as it was as a farm field. The rate of runoff has been reduced considerably by the way that we've configured the subdivision. So
I'm not an engineer, so I didn't understand which phrase to use, but I just explained it. I do remember going last fall when we first had this application, driving 190th there, and again, an untrained eye, but it seemed like there was runoff from that development area into the ditch that kind of went to Squaw Creek, and it wasn't a time when it, I saw other standing water, and I just wondered what the runoff situation was there.
Well, there's always intermittent drainage in that area. Mm-hmm. So we would call them intermittent streams. They run most of the time, except when it's really dry.
Okay. But you're saying the rate of runoff.
Well, we've so there's two ways to look at the rainfall event. There's the amount of rainfall that falls, which has to go somewhere because water comes and it goes. It's either gone up and used by the plants or it runs off. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that's about the same as an ag situation. Probably better, actually, less runoff with a housing development than ag, but there's some variables with that. But the runoff rate is considerably less because it drains slower.
Thank you very much.
So there were, if I remember correctly from the last presentation, there were a lot of discussions about creek erosion that increased since the development, and then also the make sure I have my directions, the southeast corner retention pond, that it would overflow. When it filled, it would overflow over the Hickory Hills Road.
That was untrue. It never would overflow the road. There's a culvert that goes underneath the road that was always used as an overflow.
Okay.
There was a lot of stuff that was said in that.
I'm not here to debate. I just want to make sure that, from your point of view, any of the issues, engineering-wise, that were brought up by Hickory Hills, those have all been addressed. I saw there was a lot of new rock in one of the pictures and potentially what was one of the runoff erosion points that was of concern. So
the way I would phrase it is the developer went above and beyond and made improvements above what he should have to help Hickory Hills with their own drainage problem.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Friedrich or Mr. Reno?
Thank you.
Jerry, what's the code reference on the easement length and what is it?
Our code says shared access easement shall be parallel to the front lot line and shall not exceed 50 feet in width. So we have this diagram. Kind of shows in this scenario these squares represent proposed lots in a scenario where there would be a shared access location. These two lines would represent road right of way, and so when you're looking at the width of a road right of way, it's this measurement here. The standard is typically 60-60, and so we think to be parallel to the front property line, which the front property line is actually, in this case, like the south right-of-way line, it's the same line. So to be parallel to that front property line, the easement should be parallel and not exceed the 50 feet from the north property line. So the access would be, you know, centered between the two lots, but not extend beyond that 50 feet.
Just out of curiosity, what's the setback here?
In an AR, I believe it's 50 feet.
And what would be the logic behind setting a maximum?
Like
for the
to
easement?
Be efficient, to get your access and your maneuvering accomplished near where the road right-of-way is, where you're going to enter and leave the site. And once you get to that point, you peel off with each individual lots. In their particular situation, they want to be able to control that, which they could. It's just the easement shouldn't extend any longer than 50 feet from that north property.
So how will this be resolved?
Well, one is they could challenge an interpretation, my interpretation. A separate process that ultimately involves the possible board of adjustment, not the funding and zoning commission. Two, potentially an alternative compliance request. But with something like that, we would like to receive that along with the rest of the submittal information so that staff can review it and weigh on it, and so that we can get that to the planning and zoning commission and ultimately onto the board of supervisors who we actually make the final decision.
So, what's the timetable on something like that?
Pardon me?
What's the timetable? what gets it started, what stops it, whatever.
Would be when the submittal deadline is
okay.
For a rezone request in the subdivision plan.
So that code section you read, does it say that the easement is supposed to extend the full width of the lots?
It just says shared access easement shall be parallel to the front lot line and shall not exceed 50 feet in width.
What's the difference between this and what's being proposed? Or I'm not sure I follow what the.
Yeah, they would like to have the driveway extend further eastward into the lots.
Can you go back to the diagram to the.
The brown area represents the length that they're after. And I forget, Scott, do you remember how long it is?
Well, we're just saying 100 approximately.
So if it was limited to 50, the private drives would just have to leave the shared portion of the access earlier. It'd have to Y off earlier.
Right.
Or they'd have to keep it where it is or even deeper and just deal with the fact that they are sharing lands unofficially.
Or they could be side by side with no easement. That's their goal. They're trying to control the length and the width.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're trying to be specific about how we want this done.
Yeah.
And we think we're within the code provision, by the way. We're not asking for anything extreme. We believe the 50-foot width is where it attaches, and what he's showing is actually a length, not a width. That diagram that he's showing you is incorrect. Because in the diagram, based on that, is you could put a shared driveway anywhere in that 50-foot easement.
We're just trying to overemphasize like those parallel.
But what's important is we're going to share at the lot line, which is what we have to do. We have to share at the lot line. Now, we could have a shared access that goes across another property, but wherever it connects to the right-of-way, maximum of 50-foot width.
Mm-hmm.
And then the length doesn't matter.
To be perfectly honest, I'm not sure either of you are correct or which one of you is correct. I don't think our code, I don't think that's a meaningful statement that it makes in the code. I feel for both of you having to interpret that. That's rough. I
agree exactly with that, too. It's not real clear in the way it is. What I'm saying is in common practice, other places that we go, you share a lot line or you share an easement, and then the width is like right-of-way, so that's like right-of-way into the piece. That's a maximum of 50 feet. The length doesn't matter because you've got to get to where you've got to get. We could meet Jerry's requirement, and we may do that before we bother with the rest of this. But at the end of the day, I can add an easement later on that the county's not party to and still do exactly the same thing. So we're really trying to be truthful with you and honest about how we're doing this in order to really minimize the amount of road and kind of coordinate between the two lots so that they're coordinated and people know what's happening. We already have, as you can see on there, we already have a utility easement that runs along that lot as well. And just like all utility easements that run parallel to the road, we want the road to run parallel to that as well. We don't want to have to crisscross and guess where
it
comes at.
Is the idea, just so that I, in simple terms, that you're going to put, that you're going to attach a driveway, let's call it, along that property line,
right.
To the right-of-way, right, to the cul-de-sac, right?
Yeah.
So, and it's going to go from the right-of-way, and it's going to extend into the properties,
right?
So the question is, do you split it from a shared drive to individual driveways 50 feet into the property or 100 feet into the property? Is that the question?
Yes. Okay. Yes, exactly.
You understand it fully.
Okay.
The thing is, it calls into question, I think, either interpretation is what benefit is there in regulating the length or width of the easement?
And we think it has to do with efficiencies because, you know, when you have an easement on property, it affects your development area, too. So whether it's access, utilities, stormwater drainage, it impacts where you can actually develop.
But the developer would presumably want to maximize the development area and potential of the lot, so why would we have a regulation? That's just what I don't.
Right. I understand from the county perspective, it probably helps with identifying if the drive extends, you know, X feet, then it approximates the development area, which then helps to evaluate existing vegetation and, you know, preservation area. But
is it something that we really, is it for tonight? I mean, it sounds to me like it's going to be an administrative issue, and however it goes, it may go back to Zoning Board of Adjustment and come back to us later, but it's not an integral part of the decisions we need to make tonight.
Well, I think it probably deserves a little more discussion among the board. I feel like we've listened thoroughly to the staff's presentation. We've listened to the applicant thoroughly. Let's listen to the public, and then we can have any discussion we need to have further. So, is there any members in the public that would like to speak on this issue tonight? If so, would you step up to the podium and give us your name and address for the record? All right. Going once, going twice. All right. With no public comment, then, we'll move on to commission discussion. And if you have questions you'd like to direct either the applicant or the staff, please feel free. Let's just try to ask the question, get it answered, then ask the next question, if we could. And I will remind you that we actually have two cases. The information is so interrelated that it's been presented to us in one lump sum, but we do need two motions, one on the rezoning and one on the subdivision, before we're done with our work on this tonight. I would just suggest that our job as a planning commission is to make sure that we're thinking forward and make sure these two lots have proper access. And I'm definitely usually a rules guy, but in a case where the rule is so unclear, I feel like either a 25-foot access or a 50-foot access ensures that one way or another in the future we're not going to have a property dispute over accessing these two lots. I don't know a good way to solve it, with the gray area of the code, except just to move forward. But
it was a scenario that was brought to my attention by Scott, it was today or yesterday, with regard to a development that we had east of Kelly. It was three lots off of
280th Street.
Each lot had access to a public road right away. They had frontage to the road. But the idea was that the plan was to have one access point off of 280th. So that was a request that was made by the applicant to do an alternative compliance request to have a single point of access that would serve all three lots. So in that scenario, you know, the drive was extended more than 50 feet so that the lot to the north could gain access. That was a formal alternative compliance that was submitted for that actual subdivision.
So the question might be whether we feel comfortable making a recommendation on this without considering a formal request for alternative compliance.
Yeah, our position is to support the rezoning as submitted by the applicant and to support the subdivision with the condition that they meet the last review questions. And I think the last point is the access. But the other items will be addressed.
Any other thoughts, Commissioner, you'd like to bring forward?
Well, I am noting that there aren't any of the folks that live in that particular neighborhood that talked to us last time that they aren't here. I'm noting that.
Does anyone have a motion for us tonight? Let's take the rezoning first, if we could.
Chair, motion to approve based on staff's recommendations.
Second. We have a motion by Sherwood and a second by Cable. Is there any discussion on the motion? Could we get a roll call vote, please?
Sherwood?
Aye.
Cable?
Aye.
Heal?
Yes.
McBride?
Yes.
Men?
Yes.
Merkin?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Do we have a motion for the subdivision?
Can you put up staff recommendations for that, Jerry?
Sure. It's item two, approval of the minor subdivision plat, Cameron State's third edition, with the condition that they need the review comments that were in our last review. And again, the only
is that
point
altered
that have
number,
not.
Is that altered at number two?
That's number two. The only item that has not been agreed to or met is the access issue.
Is the access issue, is that something that needs to be officially addressed through an alternative, or is that something that they can address through covenants within the property themselves?
Well, we think the access easement should look like we showed on the diagram. They don't agree with that. So it's something that needs to be addressed,
so the
alternative compliance, which they probably would have to come back at another planning zoning commission.
Mm-hmm. Again, though, it's an interpretation of an unclear.
There's that too.
And the idea is that it's a shared drive for two properties, right? Not a third property. So it's a shared drive off of a cul-de-sac and at two properties, which, given the terrain and the existing trees and things, really, it appeared to me from the picture, I could be wrong, but it appeared to me that you're already limited on how it's going to happen, and to get to the development areas of those lots requires kind of maybe a little bit deeper access than...
Is this something we can clear up tonight?
No, I guess that's my question, is there a way we can address that?
A different alternative
for a condition?
Aside from the staff alternative
that adds...
Add an additional condition.
I would view it either as an appeal to Jerry's interpretation of it that needs to go to the Board of Adjustment, or it's a text amendment to the zoning code, which is a completely different case and needs to be publicized and everything before it would come back to us. Jerry, if I had a landlocked parcel that didn't have road frontage and it was buildable for every reason except for that, and I went to my neighbor in front of me who had right-of-way access and I acquired an easement from him, would there be any limitations on the length or width of that easement?
I think in that scenario, you can get access through your neighbor's property.
And we typically view that as a long, skinny easement, basically to provide a country lane up to my parcel. So it's the subdivision regulations in particular that are... I'm just thinking of how we usually view access easements in the county outside of the subdivision regulations.
I guess the difference there is under this provision, this is applicable to lots that are approved by the Board of Supervisors rather than an existing court order or...
Right.
That's a newly created lot.
Right. Yeah, I'm just thinking of how trying to inform this discussion by how we usually think about access easements in the county. And are we concerned about the efficiency of the parcel and the width of the easement in other situations? And usually we aren't, because the property owners themselves are interested in keeping those easements as small as possible. Mm-hmm. And here we want... You know, we're setting the limit, and we're setting it across the whole front of both lots.
Well, I just think the diagram, and then you look at the shape of the parcel, It's two different things, and I don't know how you, it's kind of almost like apples and oranges in this way.
Right.
Aaron, I'd like to make a motion to approve the subdivision plot with the alternate number two. Number two.
Alternate two.
Second.
Is that you, PJ?
That was me.
Thank you. We have a motion by Cable and a second by McBride for alternative number two.
Cable?
Yes. Hold on one second. We do need a discussion on the motion. Okay, now I'll take roll call.
Cable?
Yes.
McBride?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Mend?
Yes.
Merkin?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Sherwood?
Yes.
All right, motion carries. Thank you, gentlemen.
Now they can go in the hall and duke it out, right?
Thank you.
Handle it, gentlemen.
I'm sure there's some references to other counties that we can look for similar language and see how they interpret it. See if we can come up with some consensus.
Yeah. I mean, you have to, in my view, is the reason this was put in was for access control, to limit the number of accesses that go onto the public road. Okay. So therefore, that's the important part. That's the first part. That's the first condition. You don't want to have, we could have two or three different places that we came into the cul-de-sac. We just want one. So then the question is, how are you going to make that connection? And you could, the 50-foot, there is a magic to that. Is if the two property owners didn't agree, then each one could have their own separate road that went into the public road at the same point. Why off right away from the edge of the street? But in this case, we're trying to minimize that, develop the ground appropriately so that two neighbors don't have any issues. We could easily agree to Jerry's requirement, except I think he's wrong in how he applies it. I'm being straightforward. And then go ahead and do as Aaron said. The one guy could build the road and then turn around and give an easement to the other guy. And we just want to specify that up front so it's clear. And then also it works with the easements that we have to do for utilities, which, you know, electric and gas and phone and everybody else, want that all coordinated as opposed to being kind of a mishmash.
Thanks, Scott. I mean, to me, it's a case of what's the overall intent and the overall goal rather than the black and white.
Rather than having two separate entrances onto the right-of-way, have their own drive.
There are two Ys that parallel each other forever.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to 6.2, discussion and consideration of Ordinance 01-17, a text amendment to the zoning code. Emily.
Okay, this is an application for a text amendment, which the case number is Ordinance 01-17. The applicant, Brandon Eugene Perkins, and they're proposing a text amendment to Chapter 90.10, the supplemental standards for conditional uses, and item number one, which is the commercial campgrounds and travel trailer parks. They're proposing to add a new paragraph, and that reads, H would be the letter under the standard, cabins. There may be cabins for rent to the public as an alternative to tents, RVs, or travel trailers. Cabins shall be equipped with bathroom, including water closet, lavatory, and shower for cabin occupants. Cabins may include small kitchenette with refrigerator, kitchen sink, and small residential-sized stove for occupant cooking. Cabins built in accordance with the International Energy Conservation Code that are insulated and contain permanent heating and cooling systems shall be eligible for year-round operation. Just a little background on the purpose of the text amendment. The primary reason for the applicant's request relates to their plan to acquire the property located at 5500 240th Street, southwest of Ames, to use it for a bed and breakfast, an event venue, and a commercial campground. The applicant would plan to live in the existing home and submit a conditional use permit application for a bed and breakfast, which would include an event venue for up to 200 guests. and submit a condition, and also submit a conditional use permit application for a commercial campground on the property. Their plan is to build up to 20 cabins on the site, in addition to providing sites for 10 RVs. In March of this last year, 2017, the Board of Adjustment did approve a conditional use permit for Youth and Shelter Services for a youth addictions treatment facility for males at the same property. This conditional use permit was challenged by an adjacent property owner and is currently in litigation. Staff did some analysis on the intent of the existing ordinance. And we feel that the definition of travel trailer park for commercial campground really highlights the temporary and portable aspect. I won't read the definition to you, but that's the part where we really pull up as the intent of the existing ordinance. The other part that we pull out is limiting the duration of the use. So from May through September, and then you can it's permitted for up to 30 days use between October and April. Again, we think the intent of the ordinance is to allow for uses that have little permanent impact on site, to where the where a campground is located. Allowing time for the site to rejuvenate during the winter months further decreases this impact of the temporary use on the natural areas and the habitat. Our code does our conditional use permit supplemental standards for the commercial campground does permit community buildings, which are permanent structures, to be constructed. And that's to take care of this human needs element of campgrounds, of campground users. And they provide essential goods and services to park users. For example, restroom, showers, laundry facilities, a storm shelter, community kitchen, or gathering space. Staff believe that permanent community buildings are permitted in order to offer these services for users. Separate from the experiences found with staying in a tent or an RV. The impact of one community building is less than that of the potential impact of several permanent cabins. Nearby jurisdictions, we did some research on how nearby counties, unincorporated county areas, address this use. What we found was a variety. Marshall County defines travel trailer park and commercial campground the same way we do. Again, emphasizing the portable, temporary housing. Polk County doesn't specifically address permanent versus or temporary. However, it also doesn't specifically address cabin either. In Jasper County, they define a camping unit as any tent, trailer, cabin, lean-to, recreational vehicle, or similar structure established or maintained and operated in a campground as temporary living quarters for recreation, education, or vacation purposes. So we wanted to speak a little bit to the comparison of cabins in county parks versus private campgrounds. As you may be aware, there is interest from Story County Conservation to build cabins in county parks. Cabins on county-owned parks may be permitted through our conditional use permit through any public building or structure or facility erected and used by any department of the township, county, school, district, and our city government, including, but not limited to, public aircraft landing fields and facilities, public school and sanitary land. So this is a use that currently for conservation is permitted through our conditional use process. We feel that the future of the proposed cabins on county-owned property may be more predictable than that of cabins constructed for private use. County-owned cabins have a goal of providing an additional way for the public to experience the natural areas of Story County. Permanent cabins may draw to community groups or families in the county parks longer, for a longer duration, and may also be used as a segue for experiences other than camping, such as fishing, hiking, bird watching, swimming, or other activities. Cabins on private property have the potential to evolve into other uses, and that may include permanent dwellings. As an alternative to private cabins, the applicant might consider purchasing RVs to rent on a nightly or weekly basis. RVs would meet the existing regulations and the intent of the temporary structures. Then if the site if the commercial campground use is ended on the site, the structures can be removed. Other commercial campgrounds in Story County, they're the only one that staff is aware of, is 20 Acres Campground, which is located on the south side of Highway 30, approximately 1 mile west of the city of Colo, between Nevada and Colo. The zoning of this property is commercial light industrial. There's RV and tent camping sites, our community buildings, restrooms and shower facilities, and then boat rentals, snacks, and other limited amenities. But there are no permanent cabins located at this. Standards for approval for a text amendment. The first one is the proposed text amendment shall conform to the cornerstone and capstone C2C comprehensive plan. And the second one, the proposed amendment shall conform to the scope and purpose of the ordinance. In terms of conformance of the C2C plan, I do have the applicant's response here, but I will let the applicant are here tonight, so I'll let them speak to their response. Land use goal 2 is to protect and plan for the physical characteristics of the land, including natural resources. Land use goal 3 is to consider the availability of services and infrastructure for new development. Strategies included under land use goal 3 include encouraging new urban density development within city boundaries or within appropriately planned locations as designated on future land use map. Locate commercial and industrial uses in urban areas, except where uses have specific requirements which justify a potential location in a rural area. While utility and infrastructure needs of high intensity permanent camping cabins more closely matches that of dwellings in an urban area, the recreation aspects of camping require more of a rural natural setting. Staff feels that the current ordinance addresses these conflicting requirements by limiting the duration of use. The proposed text amendment would allow higher intensity use of permit structures that require utilities to be located in natural and rural areas of the county. The natural resource area principle 1 is to generally discourage development within these areas. In unique circumstances where appropriate development types may enhance the area, recognize and encourage such approaches. The current ordinance does allow for camping that would enhance the natural area without permanent structures that may have an impact on that natural area. The permanent structures proposed in the text amendment and the proposed utilities infrastructure required, staff feels does not meet this principle. Natural resource and recreation goal 4 is to maintain, improve, and expand recreational features and their services for current and future state access and use. Related to the goal, provide safe biking, hiking, watercraft, fishing, hunting, camping, swimming, and equestrian opportunities within the village. Again, the objective staff feels and goals relate to ensuring the public has access to those facilities. C2C survey respondents also noted the need to expand recreational opportunities. Specifically, one of the respondents said that current park and recreation facilities in the county, there was a prompt that asked whether or not current park and recreational facilities in the county meet the needs. One respondent then noted they would like to see rental cabins in four years at county parks. Again, the focus here would be on enhancing the public recreation opportunities, and that's different than the proposed text amendment, which would allow privately operated permanent camping structures. Expanding recreation and camping opportunities that follows the goal of preserving natural resources and enhancing public access and educational opportunities. And the text amendment would allow high-intensity recreation uses with the primary goal of serving a commercial purpose. The second criteria is conformance with the ordinance. Again, I will let the applicant speak to their response. But Chapter 85 of the Land Development Regulations, Scope and Purpose, include to provide a balance between land use rights of individual landowners and the economic, social, and environmental concerns of the public, and then also to provide for the regulation and control of the extension of public improvements, public services and utilities, and improvement of land and the design of subdivisions consistent with the proposed comprehensive or other specific area plan outside of corporate limits. Further on in that chapter, the purpose is to foster cooperation and collaboration between rural and urban residents and public and private enterprises that enhance the quality of life assets in Story County, including promoting cooperation on economic development efforts and implement cooperative planning efforts among local governments to ensure orderly and efficient development at the fringes of Story County communities to minimize urban and rural conflicts. Staff does agree that the proposed text amendments would help to promote economic development in the county. However, we believe that the potential environmental impacts from permanent cabins would outweigh the impact on economic growth. We did hold a conceptual review meeting with the applicant and other Story County department representatives on December 7th. Emergency management did provide a comment with concern that the cabins may be in the floodplain of the creek. And if so, there should be plans to notify customers of potential flooding since there are limited escape routes. Additionally, the cabins could add to the debris in the creek. Their comments were site specific to the applicant, but we think that these concerns could can be applied to all natural areas. Story County Conservation encouraged the applicant to broaden the originally proposed language to include varying sizes and occupancies of cabins. And as well as to not specify certain codes that are subject to change over time. And then also they, the director encouraged renewable energy. Publication in the three county newspapers took place on Thursday, December 28th. We have not received any comments from the public at this time. So, based on the information and analysis provided in the staff report, planning and development staff recommend that the proposed text amendment be denied for the reasons stated below. The intent of the existing ordinance is to accommodate temporary and portable housing for a limited time period through the camping season and less time in winter months. The only other known commercial campground, 20 Acres Campground, does not contain any permanent cabins for rent. The applicant's request to amend the ordinance to add cabins in a commercial campground is the only request that we received. We also feel that this request is specific to the applicant's goals in acquiring the property on 240th Street and operating a commercial campground among the other stated uses. Permanent cabins could create significant potential for impact on environmentally sensitive areas and would substantially alter the natural landscape. Here are your alternatives, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for the staff?
Okay. So, was there any talk about how big these cabins would be, how they would be clustered, or?
Keep in mind, this is a text amendment.
Uh-huh. It would apply to the whole county for any right. camping area in the county.
Yeah,
but no square footage limitations were proposed right. in that.
At this point, it doesn't matter.
I did have it originally.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
We'll give you a chance to address that. Thanks.
So, how is this? Is this? This is an amendment to. Can you go back to it, like the first or second slide? This is a proposed amendment to.
This would be an addition to the supplemental okay. standards.
Okay, so I guess my thinking is essentially this becomes, I don't even know how to say it, like a non-mobile home park, right? It becomes a mobile home park, theoretically.
Well,
because you're building cabins,
right?
Which could be rented for an indeterminate period of time.
It's kind of, there's two different, the code is written for RVs, really which are really not growing. Year round, right? You cannot have people here. It can be?
There are.
Yeah.
Well, what was the link? Could you go back to the RV language in the beginning of the list?
Temporary portable housing.
What does it say about such use shall be permitted during the months of May, June, July, August, and September?
So the time frame, this is included in our current ordinance. This limits the time frame or the time of the year that these travel trailer parks and commercial campgrounds can be used. So during the months of May, June, July, August, and September, they may be used, but then during the months of October through April, the property shouldn't be used for more than 30 days.
For any one occupant.
Correct.
So it doesn't become a permanent housing site.
But if you're building a four-season cabin, right, heating and air conditioning and insulation.
And the proposed text amendment does say that the cabins, if they are heated and air conditioned and properly insulated, would be available for year round use.
Right. Other questions for staff? Just to clarify, the wording is as submitted by the applicant. The staff hasn't collaborated with the applicant on the wording.
We
perhaps point them in a certain direction, but
we have not. The conservation department did provide some feedback, which the applicant took.
Okay.
But Finney and Melvin has not collaborated.
Okay. So this is not a well. You're recommending denial, but it's not a proposal by the staff to agree. Okay.
And the second attachment on this item. Is prepared by the applicant, not by planning and zoning.
Correct.
Planning and development, correct?
For the application.
That is what I need to do now. Okay.
There's no
way for conditional to change this, not a text amendment to that wording, but to a conditional use wording? It'd be kind of hard with a permanent structure, I guess, right?
For we did a conceptual review meeting for the conditional use permit for the commercial campground, and the applicant indicated that they're interested in permanent structures. We did then consult Story County Attorney's Office, who indicated that that would be like an alternative compliance request that really should be more of a text amendment, which is why we're here today.
Just clarifying.
Yeah.
So,
can I follow up on your question?
Yeah.
So what you're asking is, that's not an issue that can just be left gray and dealt with on a case-by-case basis.
How many campgrounds are there in the county, really? I mean, we're just...
Okay, but rather it should be addressed. The attorney said it should be addressed in the code.
Just like an overall blanket text amendment for the whole zoning...
Right. You're opening a door for...
Well, that's what I was thinking with a conditional use. You could, you know, each case would have to come up, you know, and they have to meet all these, they'd have to meet specific criteria before it was approved.
But I think with this text amendment, you're opening a door to potentially...
Shared
residential type situations where we built these cabins, and there's not a period of use attached to them, and you can rent them year-round, and now I basically just rent a tiny house.
I think there is a limit of use in there. During from October to April, it can only be there 30 days.
Right. So the guest can only be there 30 days between...
In our current ordinance, that is the case.
I think, was that not in there?
That is submitted by the applicant.
That's for RVs, not cabins, right?
Includes
exactly.
Cabins built in accordance with the International Energy Conservation Code that are insulated and contain permanent heating and cooling systems shall be eligible for year-round operation.
Year-round, no restrictions on that then.
Correct.
Well, could there be, just thinking out loud, could there be a restriction on the length of stay for guests? So guests could not stay there more than a month, basically.
Their intent is to allow this every day of the year.
So if someone wanted a lease for 12 months out of the year, they could live in the cabin for 12 months.
Is that true?
That's not my intent.
Okay.
No, I don't want to become a landlord. That's not my intent.
Well, that's kind of, I think that's where our fear is, that this would just become lots of traffic coming and going. And
where is this? I mean, you're obviously got someplace in mind.
I think we're diverting to a specific incident that is not proposed.
What is being proposed is a text amendment
to the zoning code. This type of
and the district.
So if we can stay on track here.
Are you chiding me?
Excuse me. Ms. McBride. If we can stay on track here, please just direct your questions to the staff.
Okay.
The applicant is itching to talk. And so let's let this go and let the applicant speak here in a moment. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other specific questions for the staff?
Well, I know we're just talking about a text amendment, but what I think is inconsistent here is the text amendment talks about cabins with small kitchenettes. When you look at the second document, there's a 3,000 square foot conference hall that can be used as an event center.
So that's permitted under a conditional use for a bed and breakfast.
Okay, so they would need a conditional use for the event center.
They would need a conditional use.
Even though this text amendment does not cover that.
Okay. For the bed and breakfast.
For the bed and breakfast.
Got it.
And
that was
also the commercial campground.
So the campground, I was going to clarify on that. Commercial campground itself requires a conditional use permit. Yeah. All right, other questions for the staff?
I have a general question, if I may ask it. I don't know if this is the right time. I'm confused. Maybe somebody could enlighten me. Why is it the federal, the state, and the county are allowed to put permanent cabins on, but a private enterprise is not? I just wonder if someone could answer that.
It's a good question for the staff.
Can we?
I agree.
I'll start with this. The planning staff that you have today weren't involved in the crafting of the current regulations. So our task really is to figure out what was the intent I think Emily did a really good job of trying to get to that and to pull out the keywords. In fact, the intent is that it be a temporary situation, a temporary lodging, and that at some point throughout the year that use go away, which kind of lends itself to, you know, well, why would it be limited? And when you start thinking about the natural resources and the environment, you start thinking about the habitat and the recharging of the habitat and the natural resources that take place. There's a limited amount of time period that's allowed, the 30 days with the, how many months are we talking about? 6 months to allow for additional time. So our task was, again, to try to figure out what was the intent with the existing language, and it's basically to be a temporary use. And then with that, we looked at the surrounding counties, and we saw similar language to what Story County has. And then two, when you're getting requests to change the ordinances, you have to draw on, you know, how often or the frequency of the request for the change. And again, this is the first time that we've heard that there's a need to change it. So, you know, we're mindful of that as well.
I think there's a poor definition of the term cabin as well. And we could be talking about an uninsulated, with no utilities, just basically an enclosed shelter. Or we could be talking about a house.
I have two questions. Are there, on any state, federal, or county parks right now in Story County, are there any cabins? I'm not aware of any either. And second question, right or wrong, I'm not asking for commentary on whether it's right or wrong, is it pretty typical for a zoning code to have some catch-all for public buildings that, in a sense, gives them out to do what they like?
The federal government can do what they want.
I believe so. Restroom, showers, recreation.
I think they're speaking to the conditional use that allows county.
I'm saying there's this catch-all for public buildings that would probably allow Story County Conservation, for example, to build cabins on their own parks if they decided to do it.
With a conditional use permit.
But they would have to get a conditional use permit, but they would be reviewed under that section on public buildings, not under some commercial campground set of regulations.
Correct.
Okay. But that's fairly typical, I mean, in my understanding, to stick that in there for public facilities.
So it doesn't surprise me that the surrounding counties are going to have the same language as Story County does. Did you look at any other counties that may have more tourism type of economic development that are doing different things or innovative things with, you know, different short-term vacation rentals and that sort of thing?
Wall Lake has cabins.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to look at it as a county, you know, have different spaces that people, unique places for people to go and stay.
Dakin's Lake has a proposed two or three cabins, hopefully we'll go in.
What are they going to, oh, they'll be under Story County Conservation and they can use the conditional use permit.
Is there an assumption that if it's a county park, that it's going to stay a county park because the county's made some decision there that, as far as we know, has never been revoked. However, if somebody's doing a private venture, I'm just asking, they might change their minds and want to do something else with the land. Is that kind of...
Yes, and we spoke to that.
I don't know.
The future use of county parks or cabins on county parks, we feel, is much more predictable than on private property.
Any other questions?
And I'm not arguing for or against it. I just wanted to know if that concept came in thinking about it at all.
Yeah.
I have a question, Jerry. I have a question for you. If this text amendment had limitations as far as length of stay in those cabins, would that make it more palatable for you guys?
I don't really think so. Yeah, I mean, this is, as far as our review of it, we're trying to really figure out what we have in place right now. And we're not hearing that there's a big demand for permanent buildings in a commercial setting.
I don't know that that's something that we need to measure, though, right?
Yeah, I don't think we would have a, I mean, even if we didn't, if we, I think we need to address it even if we don't have a big demand. I mean, right. Even if one person comes every
somebody
5
to innovate,
10 years.
This,
are there other questions for this? Specific questions for the staff?
Can you repeat to me, please, what the county attorney said about conditional use? Because I'm having a hard time saying, okay, yeah, like the county conservation board can come ask you for a conditional use to put cabins up, but a private person, private business cannot do that.
The applicant would be applying for a conditional use permit for a commercial campground. The definition of that speaks to temporary portable housing.
Okay.
On the other side, an option for any public building or structure or facility erected used by any department of the township, county, school district, and or city government, including but not limited to public aircraft, landing fields, facilities, public school, and sanitary landfills. So that is where staff believes the county could get a conditional use permit for cash.
So we're going to hear from
you also, if I could take a shot at this, ask the county attorney's office if it would be appropriate to basically just work within the existing language to propose and consider cabins in the future if there were a conditional use permit application, correct? Like with alternative compliance or some other means.
We asked what they thought was how
in other words, should that be left up to bodies like ours and the Board of Supervisors or the Board of Adjustment, or should it stay yes cabins or no cabins right up front? That's what you asked the attorney's office.
We asked the county attorney's office whether or not what they're proposing to do, which is to build permanent cabins on a commercial campground, if that, you know, whether or not that would be alternative compliance request, or if it would be a tax amendment, and the county attorney's office said that should be a tax amendment. So that's what's
gotcha.
So
okay.
The goal is to make a decision. The recommendation was ultimately voted for.
Essentially, they were saying there's no way to allow cabins under the existing code in a commercial campground unless the language is changed.
I'm confused. So if the tax amendment were approved, the applicants would still have to come back to get a conditional use permit.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just want to know who owns this land right now.
Oh, I was scolded for asking that.
Oh. Well, let's see if I can get by with it.
It's a fair question.
Yeah, it is.
And does YSF have an option on this land to purchase it?
They have an approved conditional use permit for you.
Yes, because we ran a
drug treatment facility.
Okay.
The property owner is here of the property that the applicants are interested in.
Well, I don't.
But again, the item before us.
The applicant is asking in that second attachment that if there were allowed a conditional use permit, they would request that the previous conditional use permit issued for YSS be voided, as we have no intention to accomplish the purposes of that permit. And it said earlier what's happened with the YSS when that's being disputed now, but
it was challenged by an adjacent property owner.
It was challenged by a property owner.
And it's currently in litigation.
And it's in litigation. Okay. I'm just trying to get my arms around that whole situation.
So I have a question, because I'm new. So if Twin Acres Campground wants to put up cabins and Hickory Grove wants to put up cabins, am I figuring this right.
Only one of them can.
Yeah,
and it's
I
the
have
county.
A problem with that right
yeah.
now.
Okay. If there aren't any more specific questions that the staff can answer, I think we'll move on to giving the applicant a moment. And while they're hopping up to the podium, I would just offer a suggestion that there's a delicate balance here where we are only asked to deal with this application, which is an amendment to the code language, to the regulations. But it's hard to detach that from what we expect might be coming in the future.
Right.
So they're relevant to each other. So I'd ask you to just kind of keep that in balance, but also keep in mind we're being asked to amend the regulations that will affect future developments regardless of where they are in Story County. So your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Brad Perkins. I'm here with my wife, Gina Perkins. We are the persons that filed the amendment. Our current address is 1641 T Avenue, Madrid, Iowa. My current occupation is a mechanical engineer. I am right now teaching at Iowa State as a senior lecturer. Some background on this and how we got to this point. My wife and I have been for quite some time searching for a family-run business that we could run with my kids. We have five kids. The oldest is 17. He's attending DMAC. But we're also wanting to have a family business that we can be involved in, something I could hand down. Our family's passion is traveling and camping, RVs. And originally, we were thinking that we would perhaps purchase an RV park and operate it as a family business. The ones that we looked at were too far away. There aren't any locally that were for sale. And we like the Ames area. We've lived here. G and I have lived within 12 miles of Ames since I came here as a freshman in 1992 with a year and a half stint there in Kansas City. So we like the Ames area. There's a lot going on. We thought, well, you know what? Maybe we should open a commercial campground ourselves. As you've probably noticed, as you look around Story County, especially between, say, Ames and Ankeny, there aren't a lot of trees. And that really limited our scope of our campground. We're looking for something with trees, hills, streams, that type of thing. But in our research, what we found is, with commercial campground, that most of the ones that we stayed at as we traveled across the country have cabins. Almost every KOA you see has cabins for rent. And even if you look in the central Iowa area, Polk County Conservation at Jester Park has luxury cabins. Even just north of Ogden at, I have the name here. Hold on.
Don Williams.
Don Williams, thank you. Don Williams has luxury cabins for rent. There are 19 state parks across the state that have cabins for rent, ranging in size and amenities from a one-room, unheated, uninsulated, to around 3,000 square foot that can accommodate a dozen people. Those are in state-run parks. That doesn't include all the ones like Don Williams and Jester Park that are county-run. So as we looked at that, and as I looked at the financials of some of the campsites, campgrounds that were for sale, as an example, in the background that I filed, that I think all of you received and perhaps you had a chance to look through, one of the campgrounds for sale that we looked at, they had 110 like RV parking sites, and they had 18 cabins. About half of those were truly primitive. But they had as much revenue generated off of 18 cabins as 110 campsites. And that really made me rethink, you know, what are we doing? Because once we found the parcel that we intend to use and to develop our idea at, that parcel at 75 acres, according to current standards, I believe we get 20 campsites per acre is what you can max it out as. There's easily room for 110 campsites, but that would require significant disturbance to the site. And it would really lose a lot of the natural feel. And by the time you routed infrastructure, and especially roads and pads to put an RV on, you'd end up destroying quite a bit of the site, and that wasn't our goal. Our goal is to really keep it as green. I mean, right now, there's trees, there are already hiking trails, there's lots of green space to go through, you know, there's a pond for fishing. We wanted to preserve the natural areas as much as possible while still being, you know, economically, we still have to be a viable business. And by doing, you know, I asked for as many as 20 cabins. Originally, you know, initially on this, I really plan on building about 4, maybe 8. And originally in this, I filed as I was meeting with planning and zoning, and I brought up the issue of cabins. They said, well, let's look at this through alternative compliance. And that did make sense to me, because you end up disturbing a lot less of the green space with cabins as opposed to an equivalent amount of RV sites. But at that time, you know, that time they said, the attorney says we need to go to an amendment, and that's why we're here. The advantages of cabins are several. One, I disturb a lot less space. Two, I can make cabins handicapped accessible. I cannot make RVs handicapped accessible. This is important to us because as a family, we camped for several years, and then one of my sons was in a wheelchair for about a year. And as a family, that completely eliminates that particular endeavor. Having cabins will allow more people to enjoy a larger green space than trying to put the same economic generating RV sites. So between the handicap accessibility and the less disturbance of the site, you know, a few cabins makes a lot of sense, both economically but also from protecting green areas. Now, originally I had limited them to, I think, 750 square feet in my original text amendment. And then the director of the county conservation, his comments, he suggested that I get rid of the square footage limitation. So my amendment originally had a square footage limitation that I subsequently removed after his review comments. In speaking with him, he says that in fiscal year 19, their budget, they've asked for funds to build cabins at Dakin's. At least maybe one or two as a trial at first, and then they're planning to build more subsequently.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go
ahead. There's not.
Did she have a question?
No, go ahead.
Okay, all right. So I've changed this. Also, I'm a mechanical engineer, so that's where I got my reference to the conservation code, Iowa Energy Conservation Code. It just makes sense to me if I'm going to build a structure, I want it to be code compliant, and I want it to have permanent heating and cooling systems. I put in the eligible for year-round operation. One of the comments from the county health department was that if you have intermittent use of a septic system, that can be fairly hard on it. So my thought was that if it's at least allowed for intermittent use, that I could at least get people through there, water flowing. I do not anticipate anybody coming to me to rent cabins in minus 20 degree temperatures, nor do I anticipate year-round rental. I would see an amendment to limit the duration of stays as a very friendly amendment. I have no desire to turn these into year-round rentals or even, you know, half-year extended stay type of things. So I would look at those, you know, if someone had a friendly suggestion on that, I'd be more than happy to comply with that. But our request here is that all I'm asking for is that if I open a commercial campground, which is through a conditional use permit that we will be proceeding with in the months to come, all I'm asking for is to be able to do the exact same thing at the 19 state parks and probably at least, you know, a quarter or maybe even more Iowa counties that have cabins. Webster County also has cabins at one of their facilities. That's really, in essence, that's my request, is to be able to do the same thing. Now, if I could address, Emily, could I trouble you to turn to your comments at the end? Keep going. Where you gave the reasons for denying it. Okay. The intent of the ordinance is to accommodate temporary and portable. all right, the only other commercial campground, Twin Anchors, doesn't have any cabins. Of course they can't. It'd be against code.
Sorry.
They can't. Maybe they would. The temporary housing, I'm absolutely fine with. I have no intent of turning this into a small mobile home park. That would kill the whole purpose of my business. Next, adding cabins, obviously, this would be part of, this would be the first step that, as a planning and zoning, as we've been meeting, this is the first step that they wanted me to proceed with towards my ultimate goal of a commercial campground. Potential impacts for environmentally sensitive areas. This would result in far less disturbance to the environmentally sensitive areas. I have, you know, no intention of building in a floodplain. I have no intention of cutting down trees. Our site plan that we are looking, that you're going to see in the future, is going to situate these cabins so that they don't, you know, in open areas so that we can minimize disturbance as much as possible. So protecting the environmentally sensitive areas is a big, you know, that's an important thing for our business. I want this to be environmentally friendly. I want the public to come out and use it. This is a commercial campground. I would like to make money off of it. You know, that is a true statement. So, but I would like to make money off of it, but I would also like to have the same ability as the state and county parks as well. All right, so with regards to those comments, I think I've addressed them. Does the commission have any questions that I could answer?
Any questions for the applicant?
Just out of curiosity, how would you address like the stormwater and the parking and driveways and all of that sort of thing? How would that?
I'm going to have a civil engineer do the layout just like they would any other project. We've been, actually this morning, we were working on the layout and arrangement for our bed and breakfast and event center. This would be in conjunction with that. The intent here would be that if a couple wanted to get married at a country type of a setting, in, you know, like an outdoor kind of environment, they could rent the house. Maybe some of the party could stay at the cabins. You know, being able to stay on property for at least the wedding party and those that would be involved in a rehearsal dinner is pretty desirable. So, I mean, that's my intent. We'd follow all the regulations. I'm an engineer. You know, even if the county doesn't inspect, I'm going to be building things to code. Mm-hmm. You know, so with regards to stormwater management, that's easily handled. You know, septic systems, I follow the standards the county health department sets forth. I would anticipate it'd probably be maybe grouping a couple of the small cabins. And my cabins would be around 500 square feet, so it'd be pretty small. And the county health department has said I could put a few on one septic tank. I have, with 75 acres, we have space to do those things. And if a limitation like you have on, the county code has a limitation on how many RV sites per acre. You know, I didn't include that in my amendment, but that would be a way that the county could control how many of these were built. You know, it's a limitation per acre. That would also be a friendly suggestion that I would talk about well. But anyway, in answer to your question, stormwater, wastewater treatment, that has wastewater, those exact same issues have to be handled as a commercial campground. But here's the thing, 20 cabins will generate a lot less waste and water and electric consumption than 100 RV sites. A lot less. So, are there any, did I answer your question?
Absolutely.
Okay. Are there any other questions that I could address?
Thank you.
The property owner is here. If I believe Ms. Merkin, you had a question with regards to the YSS, if you wanted to let him address that.
Feel free if you'd like to speak as part of the application. Okay.
My name is Doug McKay. I live at 3016 Burnham Drive in Ames. And I may clarify that technically I don't own this property. My wife does. Our property is in trust, and I own some, and she owns that. Although she has given a statement that I believe Jerry got that said that I was could speak for her in this about this project. And one other thing I'd like to do, I normally, when I have this problem, I talk to somebody in private. I did that. It didn't work, so now I'm going to address it in public. I talked to Jerry when we were doing with the stuff with YSS. He spelled my name wrong. I don't like having my name spelled wrong. A K is an unusual name that's spelled with M-C, capital C-A-Y, rather than K-A-Y, and I like to have it spelled correctly. So I'd appreciate it if you get that done next time.